Today on Off to the Races, Ben's cat reaches the Maryland Bred Hall of Fame. King Leatherberry remembers his career. Saratoga rolls on to Whitney Day. Seth Marrow joins us. Super Accelerate gives his trainer her first stakes win in 7 years. We chat with trainer Robin Graham. All coming up right now on Off to the Races.
We're off to the races, powered by The Racing Biz, your independent voice for Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding. On the web at www.theracingbiz.com. And on the radio every Saturday morning, it's Off to the Races. Here's your host.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome to Off to the Races Radio, powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. My name's Frank Vespi, and for the next 60 minutes, we're going to be talking thoroughbred racing and breeding in Maryland, across the Mid-Atlantic, and around the country. As I just mentioned, our show powered by The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Also find us on the socials. We got Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, whatnot. Look for at The Racing Biz. You could also come to the website and pick up our free mobile app. Free mobile app for your Apple and Android devices. Lets you always have the latest Mid-Atlantic racing and breeding news right in your pocket, right on your handy-dandy device. Good stuff there. So pick up the free mobile app. What a great show we've got today. You're going to want to stick around for this one. Hall of Fame trainer King T. Leatherberry is going to bat clean up for us. He's going to remember the career of the great Ben's Cat, who's going to be inducted into the Maryland Bred Hall of Fame later on this month. King going to join us at about 10:40 or thereabouts. Also going to have trainer Robin Graham and Seth Marrow. Seth is the founder of Equidaily.com and a handicapper and host on Capital OTB TV. He's going to be talking all things Saratoga with us. He's been up there all meet, will continue to be up there all meet. So lots of insight from Seth Marrow, a couple good stories. It's a fun conversation. Closer to home today, at Colonial Downs, they've got two stakes on tap. These are both Virginia restricted races for two-year-olds. In the Keswick for fillies, Carmelina is the 5-2 morning line favorite for trainer Butch Reed. In the Hickory Tree for the boys, Ollie Figgins going to saddle favored King Conti. This guy, he was super impressive in winning his debut. Now, that was on the turf, so we'll see if that translates over to the main track, but one to keep an eye on there. Some news from last week at Laurel Park. It was DeFrancis Dash Day. The big one went to Lightning Larry.
They make the turn for home. Wonder Where Craig Is. Clicked off a half mile in 44.65 and leads by a length of the outside. Lightning Larry's trying to get going now. Lightning Larry's been in pursuit as it's rock solid pace. On the outside, Lightning Larry. Lightning Larry. Wonder Where Craig Is. Tries to dig. Lightning Larry and Wonder Where Craig Is. 1-2 in the Frank J. DeFrancis Memorial Dash. Lightning Larry wins it by a neck.
4-year-old Lightning Larry has now won 8 of 18 in his career. Now over $600,000 in purse earnings. Daniel Centino up for trainer Jorge Delgado. We've actually got a story about Centino up on theracingbiz.com right now. He's 51 years old. Good for him. Still riding at a high level. Lightning Larry was vanned off after the race as a precautionary measure, but Delgado, the trainer, said the next day that his star was fine. So good news on Lightning Larry. Now at Charlestown last Saturday, Great Spirit, a talented half-sister to the late, great one-turn sprinter, Dr. Feelgood. She tried two turns for the first time in the Sylvia Bishop Memorial Stakes, and I think it's safe to say she passed that test with flying colors.
Great Spirit to the top of the stretch in front. She tries to put away Lightning Runner. Juba's Parade on the far outside. Barber's Point and Lucky Blonde. They're inside the final furlong, and Great Spirit is pouring it on. She's in front by 5. Juba's Parade and Lucky Blonde late on the scene. Great Spirit is going to score in the Sylvia Bishop Memorial. She stretches out and wins it by 3.
Great Spirit has won 5 of 7 for trainer Crystal Pickett and owner Jill Daniel. She was ridden a victory by Jose Montano. Quick shout out and thanks to some supporters of Off to the Races Radio, including the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Wanamakers.com online horse auction site, True Valor, the stallion standing at Northview, and Richard Hackerman, attorney at law. Thanks, guys. We appreciate you very much. Now, looking ahead for the rest of the weekend's racing, Laurel Park Racing Live today and tomorrow, post time 12:25, Delaware Park Live today only, post time 12:30, Charlestown Races tonight, post time 7, and of course, Colonial Downs now live with a Thursday to Saturday schedule, post time 1:30 in New Kent, Virginia. Now, remember, Seth Merrow's coming up in 15 minutes or so. Talk all things Saratoga. Hall of Famer King T. Leatherbury going to join us after that, right about 40 minutes after the hour. One of the stakes on the DeFrancis undercard was the Star de Nascra for Maryland restricted three-year-olds, and it went to Super Accelerate for owner Stephen Walfish.
Easy Action keeps on going. Easy Action down to the rail. Super Accelerate willing in between horses to make a final furlong bid now. And here comes Super Accelerate. Super Accelerate in between horses. Coffee with Chris is still there on the outside too. Coffee with Chris. Super Accelerate down to the 16th pole. And Easy Action third on the inside and still battling along. Super Accelerate.
Horacio Caramanos was in the irons for Super Accelerate. He's a runner who's now won three consecutive races, took him a half dozen tries to break his maiden, now won three straight, gets his first stakes win. And actually, the win also gave trainer Robin Graham her first stakes win in 7 years. She's trained some good horses over the years, including three grade two winners. So she knows what to do with a good horse and has a good thing going here with Super Accelerate. I caught up with Robin Graham the other day. Here's our conversation. Robin, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races Radio. Well, you and your barn, you guys got to have a little pep in your step this week after Super Accelerate with a super impressive win in the Star de Nascra.
Everybody's very excited.
I bet it has been. This is a horse, he's won three straight now, and it feels like he's really taken pretty significant steps forward in each of those races. Is that how it feels on your end?
Yes, but it's mostly we caught up to what he wanted. We've known from the very beginning that he was a nice horse. I've always told Stephen after we had him for a bit, I said, I think he's one of the nicest horses I've ever had. And that's why I had Caramanos come get on him the first time he came and breezed him. He came back. He said, Rob, this is a good horse. I said, yeah, I know. He said, no, I mean a really good horse. So we thought that it was just trying to figure all the little nuanced things to get him to where he needed to be.
And so talk about that a little bit more. Like, what are some of the things that you guys had to tinker with to get right for him?
He's a big, heavy horse, and he's a colt, and he would want to get on his front end. You know how a horse will want to bow its neck and be all bunched up on the front end? And he wanted to do that. He would ask you, please take hold of me so I can do that. And we've been working on getting to carry himself and balance himself better so that he's not so hard on his ankles and his knees and his feet. And it's really, he's finally getting it. And he's developed, his brain has been great. His body has been trying to catch up. Like, he looked super mature, but he wasn't. And everything just had to catch up with the way his brain was. And luckily, the owner's been terrific being patient and saying, you know, what you need to do, not rushing, and that's all been great. But he needed to catch up with himself, and we needed to give him time and let him figure how to do it. We've never taken him out of training. He's been here all along. It's just digging along and working on it.
He took six tries to break his maiden, and was that what was going on? You were just sort of getting to know him, and is that kind of how that went?
A lot of it is. I never put him on Lasix because I really felt like he was a good horse, and we had scoped him, and he hadn't bled in the morning, so I thought, well, let's see if we can do this, if it'll work. And I expected him to win at Pimlico, and he ran fairly poorly. I think maybe finished fourth that day, and I was really disappointed. And I thought, well, maybe I've messed up and maybe he's bleeding. So I had our vet scope him, and he said, Rob, he's absolutely clean. Everything looks perfect. He said, but he displaces his soft palate really easily. So I thought, that's probably what's been going on. So we changed the bridle, changed the nose band, and he's never made a noise. Lots of times when you're galloping a horse, you can hear it. If you're on the ground, when the horse goes by, you can hear it. Lots of times in the afternoon, a rider will tell you, nobody's ever said anything. And he would do it and not make the noise, but it was enough to keep him from doing what he needed to do. So changed the bridle, changed his nose band, and been working ever since.
Yeah, it really has. He's won three straight since. So I'm guessing you said you felt pretty confident going into the race at Pimlico. That was four races back. So I guess after he runs disappointingly and then you tinker with the bridle, probably the next time you come back, you're more in the fingers crossed mode. Is that fair?
Yes, of course. Most of the time when you run a horse, it's fingers crossed going into it anyway, but yes. But we thought we had figured what it was, and naturally it really did work.
Yeah, no, it has. So going into the start in Askra, that was a pretty big ask, it felt like, in the sense that, you know, you had a couple of nice horses there you were facing. You had Coffee with Chris, who's won open stakes. You had a shipper in there. So you're facing a couple of nice horses. He needed to have his running shoes on that day.
Yep, absolutely. But he's come out of each race now, the two before this, better than he went into it. More relaxed, more just, oh, I know what I'm doing now. I got this. Other than when he won that, his time was faster than the stake that ran that day. They both went 7 furlongs, and his time was faster. And he had to dig for it. It's not like he was by himself. So we thought he had the mental capability and all that. So I didn't feel terrible throwing him in the start of Oscar, even though there were several really nice horses in there.
Yeah, the horse you beat in the A other than was Freeze the Fire, who came back in the start in Askra. And
yep.
Freeze the Fire had been a super impressive first time out winner at Pimlico. So.
And ran great buyer number, and that was they didn't give us a good buyer number. And nobody could figure out why. But who cares? I mean, I don't even really know how they come up with that. But we had bet on him, and we never bet, but we bet a couple dollars just because of what the heck, as long as those odds were. And I still have no idea why the numbers came back so bad on him that day, but doesn't matter now.
Right. Nobody told the horse, so he was
so. No, absolutely not. He's glad he can't read.
We're talking with trainer Robin Graham, who won the start in Askra Stakes last week with Super Accelerate. The obvious next questions are, how'd he come out of it, and what are you thinking of next for him?
He came out of it great, walked a few days, ate everything up, was just upset or anything at all, and going back to the track, and he's great. We're looking at the race at Charlestown. It's the Bobby Hilton Memorial, yep. The end of August. It's 7 furlongs also. And everybody has a fit about the small track, but we bought him at Timonium, and he had been galloping at Timonium and breezed on that track. So he's not like some of the horses that have never dealt with a track that size. And that's an awful lot of money not far from home.
No, it is a lot of money not far from home, and it's a good spot. It seems like to me a good spot for him, certainly. So Super Accelerate is an exciting prospect. Now, Robin, when you said earlier, and I had talked with Tom Bowman, who was a co-breeder of the horse, and he said you called him and said, yeah, this, you know, we're really high on this horse. This might be one of the best ones I've had. And for people who aren't familiar with your record, you know from a good horse, you among others, you trained Lady Sibelia, who won the Grade 2 Barbara Fritchie. trained Mr. O'Brien, who won a couple of Grade Twos, and I believe ran in the Breeders' Cup. So there's a little bit of history of some good horses coming through your pretty small operation.
Yep, and that's and I kept thinking, could he possibly be better than they are? And he's just done everything right coming along so far.
Which is obviously what you like to hear. Now, I do want to go back. We talked about this a little bit offline, but Mr. O'Brien in particular was a fun horse. He was unlike this horse. He's a horse that kind of was pretty good right from the get-go, but he got really, really good when he won the Henry S. Clark at Pimlico and then turned around and won the Dixie his next time out. What was that kind of run like for you guys?
Well, he was, being a turf horse, it seems as though a lot of them get better as they get older and more mature. And it just worked in perfectly for him. And it didn't matter what distance we ran him. He finished, I think he's beaten the neck in the United Nations. And I think that's a mile and 3/8. I mean, he ran in some far races and was right there.
Yeah.
He was a very cool horse.
Yeah, he was. So I told you offline, when he won the Henry S. Clark, I said to some people, like, this horse is going to win the Dixie too, which he did. But somebody else who had the exact same response was Frank Carulli, who you may remember used to do the handicapping at Laurel. And I interviewed him, I don't know, about 10 years after, because Mr. O'Brien was like the mid-2000s, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was running 2004.
Okay, yeah. And I interviewed Frank about 10 years after that. And he referenced the Henry S. Clark, and he said, I knew he was going to win the Dixie, and I made the biggest bet I've ever made. And Frank even said, you know, and he paid, I don't know, $27.40 to win the Dixie or whatever it was. And I looked it up, and this was 10 years later, and I looked it up, and he was almost right on it.
Really? So it was memorable.
Yeah, it was memorable, and he had sort of a photographic memory for bets and payouts and stuff.
Especially if he made it.
Yeah, exactly. But but nobody, you know, like the betting public at large didn't see that effort coming from that horse. Did you?
I did. I was right after I had known when we did the Henry Clark, if he ran well, I wanted to come back in the Dixie, and I hadn't talked to Skedaddle and told them that yet, but I don't want, you hate to say stuff like that head on because you don't want to look like a dummy. And
if he doesn't run well, yeah.
Well, yeah, but I think one of the things is the trainers from out of town that have a bunch of really nice horses, especially foreign bred, which Mr. O'Brien was. Of course, you're looking for those guys to win because they do. I mean, they just have really nice horses, but this little horse didn't know the difference.
And then about 10 years after that, you came back with Lady Sibelia. And it was interesting, you sort of referenced this a minute ago with Super Accelerate. Lady Sibelia, you used Caramanos a lot on her, and she won you a bunch of stakes, including the Fritchie. And now you're kind of getting the band back together for another run with Super Accelerate.
Exactly. Yep.
What do you see? What do you like about Caramanos on these kind of high-end horses?
One big thing is when I talk to him, he understands what I mean. He understands what I want and what I'm looking for. Some riders just don't click with certain trainers, I think. And it's not that they're bad. It's none of that. It's understanding what you want and where you're going. Like in the A Other Than, when Super Accelerate ran in that, Caramanos didn't have to take him back, but he did. He sat back off the speed a little bit to try to see what will happen. Will this horse do this, looking at the next race coming up? So we, you know, he knows what I want, and we hardly even have to talk the day of the race because we've both looked at the past performances. We both know what we think and been there, and just it happens.
Well, he's known as a kind of a big homework guy, isn't he? I mean, that was always my impression, that he's a guy who's done the work to know what the horse needs.
But he doesn't have a pre idea of what the horse can do or can't do. He's really good that way. He's open to, what do you think about? He's really good that way. So yes, he's looked at all this stuff, but just because a past performance might not look good, he's not dooming the horse to whatever was going on before.
Years ago, I owned a horse he rode. The horse was impossible. Like, you couldn't hit him with a stick. He couldn't run next to other horses. But he had talent. Right. He just was had all
quirky
this
about
stuff.
It. Yeah.
And we had rider after rider, do everything wrong, and then Karamanos got on him, and so he kept getting beat. He'd get beat ahead. He'd get beat half a length. He just found ways to lose. Karamanos gets on him. Has watched all the replays, and when the horse comes up to the horse on the lead, he doesn't let him lug in, doesn't hit him with a stick, and our horse draws off and wins. It's like the horse was like, finally, you got me. Somebody gets me.
Yes, somebody understands. Yes, and that's what they wait for, and that's just, you just have to figure out what it is they're looking for.
Yeah. All right, well, that's a good place to end it. Super Accelerate wins the start in NASCAR, headed to Charlestown for his next start in the Bobby Hilton Memorial Stakes. Robin Graham, the trainer, thanks very much for joining us here on Off to the Races. Good luck. We'll be following this horse down the road.
Thank you very much. It's great talking to you.
All right, that was trainer Robin Graham. Robin Graham, trainer of Super Accelerate. Super Accelerate wins the Start in Ascra Stakes this past Saturday at Laurel Park, probably headed to Charlestown and the Robert Hilton Memorial Stakes for his next outing. One to keep an eye on. He ran pretty fast. That was a pretty good race in the Start in Ascra. So keep an eye on the sophomore, the three-year-old Super Accelerate, trained by Robin Graham. Looking ahead, still a lot to do here on Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. Hall of Fame trainer King T. Leatherberry going to join me. He's going to kind of close up the shop here with us. He'll join us at about 20 of 11. Good stuff there is Ben's Cat getting in the Maryland Thoroughbred Hall of Fame. He's going to talk to us about that, his most memorable race. And I asked him a question, actually, I've never heard the answer to before, which is, who was Ben? Who was the Ben that Ben's Cat was named after? So interesting stuff. A really fun conversation with the 90-year-old Hall of Fame trainer, King Leatherberry. Like I said, that's coming up at about 10:40. Now, want to turn our attention northward. Let's look north, not to Alaska, but to Saratoga, racing at the Spa in full swing. Right now, the Whitney is taking place later on today, along with the Test and Pennsylvania bred Caravelle going in the Troy. So a lot going on there. Still to come, the Travers, of course. Last week they had the Jim Dandy, where Forte kind of banged his way clear for free running and went on to run down Saudi Crown and get the money. And the Jim Dandy set himself up as the, I would assume he's going to go favored in the Travers coming up end of August. And somebody who's up there paying close attention, you might have seen his website, equidaily.com. Seth Marrow is a handicapper analyst, host on Capital OTB TV up in the upstate, in the Albany Capital District region. So he knows the Saratoga stuff for sure. So I wanted to have a conversation with Seth about what's going on at Saratoga and what we should look for in the weeks to come. Here's my conversation with Seth Marrow. Good morning. Thanks for joining me on Off to the Races Radio. I guess I got to start by asking you the question that's sort of been on everybody's mind for the last week. Forte, you take him down or not?
I probably would have. Close. But I mean, he made his own room, and you're not supposed to be able to do that. Now, he claimed that the horse was coming out, and so he was kind of trying to protect himself, and but he made his way out. Now, that also said, I had a dog in the fight because I liked Angel of Empire, and the jock on Angel of Empire said the bumping took the starch out of that one. So that was another reason, I think. And he was only three quarters of a length back, so I probably would have.
I tend to agree with you, and I feel like to not take him down, you have to decide that that was not a foul, because I've seen some people say, well, it didn't affect the order of placing, but of course it did, because if Forte doesn't make his own room, he finishes third. He's got nowhere else to go.
Yeah. Yeah. And Twitter, somebody was kind of saying incredulously, well, you know, they had him blocked in on the backstretch. Of course they did. That's what they're supposed to do.
Right.
They're supposed to make it tough for him to get out. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some people on Twitter who say some stuff. You're like, what?
Like, that's exactly what they were supposed to do. That's how you ride a race like that. You kind of race ride the horse that you think is the logical player and hopefully get the advantage.
Yeah, exactly right. So Seb, you know, everybody I've spoken with, you and others who spend the whole meet at Saratoga, tell me, you know, they all sort of say the same thing. Like, they look forward to the meet all year, they love it, but by the time they get to the end, they're ready for it to end. So let me ask you, where are we in the meet? Still feeling good, or are you starting to look for the wire?
Well, Sunday night, I wrapped up and went home and turned the TV on, and 3 minutes later, I was asleep. So part of Saratoga is also, the social aspect, and you'll hear that from the horsemen and the jockeys as well. There's a lot of events, a lot of charity events, and people are throwing parties, and so I've been on people's decks for barbecues, and Thursday night, I was over at the jockey versus horseman basketball game for to benefit the racetrack chaplaincy. That was a lot of fun. John Wallace, Syracuse and NBA alum, was playing kind of the ringer on the jockey side of things. And on the horseman, Will Walden was a little bit of a ringer. He was a pretty good player. And then there was assistant, I believe, to Tommy Amos, who seemed like a little bit of a ringer too. I mean, he was a legitimate horseman, but he had clearly played. The horseman, for the first time in a number of years, actually pulled it out and won by four. But again, I was over Thursday night and then had to pop home and do some work for television in the morning and handicapping. And I have picks that show up in the paper, and I put them on my website and put them over on the Capital OTV website. So, 5 days a week, it's rolling. And even on the off days, I mean, this coming week, I'll go over to the sales. That's always a great time. And there's been some other events that have happened on the off days. So, yeah, it starts, and you said it, we look forward to it. And you hate to see it go, but at the same time, when it gets to that last day, everybody in my boat who is up here, every day working, tough job, but somebody has to do it. But you are working, and you get to Labor Day, and it's time for a sigh of relief.
Right. Hey, I get to sleep a little bit now.
Yeah, exactly.
That's quite a ringer for the jockeys to bring in John Wallace.
Yeah. Yeah, they weren't kidding around. I expected him to maybe make a run because it was a tight battle, and I thought he was going to kind of take over. I think he was taking it easy on everybody, but it was a fun night. It was right down the street, Saratoga Rec Center, maybe three blocks from the racetrack, and the joint was jumping. It was rocking. And again, benefits the racetrack chaplaincy. They do a great job, helping out with folks on the backstretch. So a nice event, as are a lot of the events up here. I was Kendrick Carmouche the other day. That was a dark day event. Beginning of the week, downtown Saratoga at the Italian American Club, they had gumbo from Kendrick Carmouche to benefit the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. So that was another really good event, a lot of fun. And again, that's what the 8 weeks is like, just a lot of great racing, fun at the racetrack, but fun off the racetrack as well. And the first few weeks on the racetrack been phenomenal. I mean, Ness the other day over Clarier, that was great. Elite Power, middle of the stretch, I like Gunite. I thought, I've got it. And then Elite Power runs him down. Forte maybe helped sort out the three-year-old picture. I mean, he had to work, even with the situation, he had to work to beat Saudi Crown. So, we'll see how it stacks up in the Travers now, if that the three-year-old picture really does become clearer, but it's fun meet so far, on track and off.
Yeah, good stuff. And by the way, Seth's website, if you want to track his picks down, is equidaily.com. And he's been doing that for a long time, as well as hosting Capital OTB TV's Racing Across America. Let's talk about tomorrow or Saturday a little bit this afternoon. I got my days all screwed up here. But, Seth, we got the Whitney, Grade 1 Whitney, $1 million on the line, but just six horses. And it's such a common lament, but it's true everywhere these days. What are we going to do about field size?
Yeah, I just don't know what you can do. I mean, you put up $1 million and you don't draw them in. Hats off to Delmar, which at least through the first week or so of their meet was really putting together some big fields. But as you say, and that'll be hard for them to hold up throughout the whole meet, I think. But yeah, it's something that full crop size has been down going back a ways now, and that clearly plays into it. You just hope the undercards and whatnot offer some value. And we have had short fields up here in stakes races, but again, we've been treated to some really nice performances and nice horses facing off. Elite Power and Gunite played into the scenario and faced off down the stretch, and Nest and Clairiere, same thing. So, these don't necessarily make for great betting events, but they are check marks if you're watching, or if you're on track, you can say, hey, I saw a really nice performance. And I think we're set for similar scenario Saturday with the Whitney, with again, a short field, but with Cody's Wish in there, Charge It, Way to Barrio, Zandon. It's a fun field, no doubt.
I'll tell you what, if you had told me just about a year and a half ago, a little less than that, after Zandon won the Bluegrass, that he would still be running regularly and not have won another race since then, I would have bet everything I could get my hands on against that outcome. I mean, he's run a lot of good races without winning, hasn't he?
Yeah, potent connections, obviously, with Chad Brown. And as you say, when you have an up-and-coming three-year-old from an outfit like that and the big victory in the Bluegrass, you don't expect the record we have seen since. Now, it's been facing very good company. Epicenter, Taba, last time out, ran second in the Met Mile behind Cody's Wish. So we're really running against top quality runners in the couple of divisions, going back to the three-year-old season last year and older this year. But he's talented, puts in the good numbers. I think he's a player in the Whitney. Charge It is another one that there was a point in the career where you thought he is on the shot to the moon and hasn't quite lived up to it, but rebounded last time nicely in the Suburban. So he's interesting. Last Samurai this winter down at Oak Lawn was fabulous for Wayne Lucas, and he becomes an intriguing player in there as well at maybe a little bit of a price. But to me, it all goes through Cody's Wish. The question mark, obviously, is the distance. But I have a strong feeling that 1 1/8 up at Saratoga is going to be well within his wheelhouse, and he'll continue the nice story for Vilmot Godolphin and the whole Cody Dortmund story behind it as well.
So your take on the Whitney is eat the chalk, Cody's Wish going to get it?
I think so. I have to kind of look and see as far as playing maybe a pick four or something, if I go a little, because you get by him, that's going to balloon things up. So if I was playing a pick, I would potentially put Charge It on and maybe Zandon as well. And again, if you get by Cody's Wish, I think it'll balloon up those picks a little bit. It's just I'll have to look at the other legs and see what I'm looking at as far as price. But I would probably go three deep, but I think the race pretty clearly goes through Cody. If somebody said I'm singling Cody's Wish and I have a couple of clever ideas elsewhere, I wouldn't argue them off of that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, another one of the stakes, another short price favorite, but a favorite horse here in the Mid-Atlantic is in the Troy Stakes. We get to see Caravelle back at it. She's 3-5 on the morning line facing off against the boys. Man, she's really turned into a monster, hasn't she?
That is exactly the word I was going to use. She certainly has. She's run well up here before. And, you know, you look at the record, the last four races, she's got a five race win streak. But out of that, in the last four of those, Breeders' Cup, Turf, Sprint, the Shakertown, and last time in the Juiper, she faced the boys and beat them all. So I think she's going to be very tough Saturday in the Troy. Cogburn to me for Steve Asmussen is a little bit interesting. Numbers wise, probably has to jump up buyers wise to get to Caravelle, but it's Steve Asmussen and a horse that kind of turned the corner moving to the turf and could add some value. No Balls comes off the couple of wins going back to Churchill and Horseshoe Indianapolis last time, and I think on a best effort that one's interesting. Remuda with a bullet work coming in from Turfway, I thought could be a player, you know, if you're looking for a little bit of a price to play around with. But again, Caravelle's just been so good. And again, she's a fun story, talented horse, the filly facing the boys, and I think she's going to be the one to beat in there as well.
Yeah, she's terrific. What else are you looking forward to tomorrow? This will be our exit question here. What there are a number of other stakes, the Test, the Saratoga Derby. What are you looking forward to most?
Perhaps the Test, just to see what Maple Leaf Mel can do. I mean, this is a New York bred who was phenomenal against New York breds in the first three starts and then went down to kind of Test Open Company in the Miss Preakness, got that done, then tried the Victory Ride last time and got that done, and has stepped up to the plate each time. But with Pretty Mischievous in the race tomorrow, who you would have to say is the leader at this point in the three-year-old Philly division, but the owners also have Wet Paint. So they're saying, Wet Paint, let's go Coaching Club and let's go Alabama. And let's cut back to the 7 furlongs for Pretty Mischievous. I don't know whether this is the normal route you expect for a winner of the Kentucky Oaks and then following that up with the Grade 1 Acorn. But, again, they have the two nice right runners, so they'll go Wet Paint with the longer Alabama. And they'll try here. And why not? You put another Grade 1 on the resume, perhaps. So Pretty Mischievous, I think, the one to beat. And, you know, had some people on the show this week, and we talked about the race. And a few people are looking at Dorth Vader to maybe be interesting. With a lot of early speed at the 7 furlongs, Dorth Vader has shown some talent, clearly, and might be the one that is going to be most interesting in the stretch. But I'm looking forward to see if Maple Leaf Mel can pass in another test for the coach, Bill Parcells.
Yeah, good stuff. Yeah, that's a neat story too, right? Because he's named, or she's named after,
yeah,
now the trainer, right, Melanie Giddings?
Yeah. I tried to get her on my TV show on Friday, and she said, I'm crazy busy. I want to come on, but I'm crazy busy. And I think, you know, winding up with a horse like this, she's just been on her own for a while now. She was an assistant to Jeremiah Englehart, who, if people look at the PPs, he trained the horse. And, yeah, Bill Parcells, at that point, named the horse after her. Yep.
Neat stuff. All right, Seth Merrill, we're going to let you go. Thanks so much for joining us here on Off to the Races, and good luck the rest of the meet.
Appreciate it. Always enjoy the conversation, and we will talk again down the road. And everybody enjoy the races up here at Saratoga and beyond, and have a great summer.
All right, thanks much. And once again, Seth's picks, you find them on equidaily.com.
Seth Merrill there from Capital OTB TV and Equidaily.com, following all the Saratoga action. As we said, Whitney Stakes coming up later on today. We'll see if Cody's Wish can get a mile and an eighth for the first time in his really so far pretty spectacular career. So should be a fun day at Saratoga, fun race to watch. Now, news came earlier this week that two new members of the Maryland Thoroughbred Hall of Fame were to be inducted. They are Mountain Dew and Ben's Cat, both of them horses known for their longevity. Mountain Dew was a jumper in the 60s, a steeplechaser who ran at a really high level for 8 years, eight consecutive years running in the major Maryland races, the Hunt Cup and the Grand National. So quite a career for him. And all of us, of course, are very familiar with the great Ben's Cat.
Rapiden. Ben's Cat saving all the ground, is trying to charge from fourth of the furlong, left to go. 44 second half mile. Rocket Heat is the leader. Rocket Heat up top, spring to the sky. Ben's Cat surging late. Can Ben's Cat get there? Here comes the Cat. The Cat surges through. Oh, 2016 is the year of the Cat. He's 10. He's better than ever. And it's Ben's Cat in the Jim McKay Turf Sprint. Fifth Jim McKay Turf Sprint for the remarkable Ben's Cat.
That was Dave Rodman on the call there of Ben's Cat's victory in the 2016 Jim McKay Turf Sprint at Pimlico. Turned out to be Ben's Cat's final win of his career. He raced several more times that year, but didn't win again. And I think raced twice the following year, didn't win either of those. So that was the final win of his career. And we're going to talk with King Leatherbury about that in just a minute. Ben's Cat won 32 of 63 starts in his career, earned over $2.6 million. And I would argue probably had about as much as any of the many, many horses that King Leatherbury trained, with getting King into the National Museum of Racing Hall of Fame, which he accomplished in 2015. You know, King had done many remarkable things, including winning more than 6,000 races in his career. But I think it was Ben's Cat that kind of kept his name on the scene and in people's minds for a few more years to kind of reconsider what exactly he had accomplished in that career and help get King into the Hall of Fame. And now Ben's Cat in the Maryland Thoroughbred Hall of Fame. Really honored and happy to have this chance here to talk with Ben's Cat's owner, breeder, and trainer, Hall of Famer King T. Leatherbury. King, good morning. Thanks for joining me here on Off to the Races. Ben's Cat going in the Maryland Thoroughbred Hall of Fame. What was your feeling when you first learned that he'd gotten in?
Oh, well, it was obvious. One of the best horses in Maryland in years, in later years here, that he'd be the first choice to go in. I don't know how long of a period they wait before they get him in. So, but when they called me that he was voting on it, was much in my favor.
Yeah, no, he's the, it's a 5-year waiting period. So he is he's the first horse who retired after we started the Hall of Fame to get in on the first ballot.
Oh, I'll be darned. That's good.
Yeah.
I didn't know how it worked. Yeah.
Yep, that's how it works. Now, are there, as you look back on his career, and I have one sort of specific race that I remember of his, but are there specific races of his that stand out to you?
Well, his last win was possibly the most exciting race I've ever seen. And that was because I thought I'd win the race. But as the race started, you had I was back in the pack. And at the 3-8 pole, there were two horses about 6 or 8 lengths in front of me. And I'm just thinking, geez, just hang on for third, because, you know, third money is every little bit counts. So that's all I was asking him to do in my mind, just hang on for third. Never thought he could close from that. And then I had Trevor McCarthy riding, and he had two horses in front of him, and he decides to split them, go in between them, which was a very dangerous thing to do. But had he not done that, because he only won by a nose, and so he made the right decision. But normally you don't put yourself in a position to be shut off like that. You know, either one of the horses bear out or lug in, and he's trapped. So it just seemed impossible to win until the land. The funny thing that I like about it is our caller, Dave Rodman. His call of the race was so exciting. Now, when he's calling the race, he's supposed to be calling from an unbiased, you know, spot. Every horse is a horse, he doesn't suppose to have an interest in the race. But as he calls, if you ever hear that replay back again, he says, "And it's Ben's cat. Can he do it?" That's what he said. Can he do it? As he was approaching the wire. And old Ben just got in between those horses and boom, stuck his nose in. It was so exciting to me. And then the crowd at the winner's circle was amazing. It seemed like all these people were down there clapping. When he came back, he got an applause. And I mean, it just sent chills in my back and tears in my eyes.
That was the exact race I was thinking of as well when I asked that question. I've got a picture that a photographer who was working for me at theracingbiz.com took of Trevor on Ben in the winners, coming back to the winner's circle. And the look on Trevor's face is like excitement and happiness, of course, but it's also, he looks a little amazed, like, I didn't think we were going to be able to pull that one off.
He probably did. He probably did think that. But no, it's the first time he rode him. An interesting thing, I mean, you're talking about riders. In Ben's cat's whole career, the first time any rider would ride him, he would always win.
Really?
The first race, I think whoever it was, Pimentel, I think. His first time Pimentel rode it, he won. And then I think it was next little. But some of them are littler than riders. I can't even think of what I'm talking about now. Yeah, he doesn't ride in Maryland much. But he was one time a super rider, then he kind of faded back and he's hanging around now. It's awful. I can't think of these names. I know the guys. I know them well. But anyhow, first time he rode me one. First time. It's only one time that Rosemary, the female rider, rode him. Once, only one time she won. First time Trevor. No, it went through his whole career. Anytime he had a new rider, he'd win.
Why was that, do you think? Was it just luck? Or,
no, it just so happened. No, it just so happened. I mean, it just so happened, that's all. Because it should be just the opposite. You know, a rider says, well, I know that horse. You know, none of them knew him when the first time they got thrown up in the paddock.
Yeah, talking with King Leatherberry, owner, breeder, trainer of Ben's Cat, going to the Maryland Thoroughbred Hall of Fame. The induction ceremony going to take place at Timonium in the second Saturday of the Timonium meet. I think it's September 2nd. Now, one of the things you just talked about, this he won the Jim, that was the Jim McKay Turf Sprint we were just talking about. He won that by a nose. He won a lot of races by very narrow margins.
You're right. You're right. What? If it was a photo, he got it.
Yeah,
I think one photo was at Parks racing. We hit the wire, and some horse just had a little bit more in them than we did. And I remember Scott Lake coming up to me afterwards. He said, tough win, tough loss, he says. Tough loss, Leatherberry. But but most of them he won. You're right. He never won like the horse that he was. Yeah, usually a good horse will win by 4 or 5 lengths. He didn't do that.
Yeah, what do you think it was? Do you think he just kind of...
Well, no, he did know where he was. He did know where he was. He did know he was supposed to beat that other horse. So that was in his mind. Now, the horses, you got to give him credit. He's, you know, a lot of animals are very smart. But he seemed to know when he went out. And the first time, he won his first 8 races. And his 9th race, he got beat in. And when the groom was walking him back to the barn, where it comes to a point where you turn right to go to the detention barn, he made the right hand turn, and he didn't realize he got beat that day.
Uh-huh. That's interesting. Now, you started the horse in Maiden Claim and Company. One of my favorite conversations in racing, I had the chance to sit down with you and Kenny Taylor. Kenny was the owner of Extra Heat. You and Extra Heat went into the National Hall of Fame together, and you were sort of comparing notes on Extra Heat and Ben's Cat, and both of whom started for a claiming tag, and you were sort of comparing notes about how miserable you would have been if the horses had gotten claimed.
Oh, my God. It'd make a man commit suicide. I made a joke out of that because in the Hall of Fame in the ceremony in Hall of Fame, there was a horse from California, if you get his name now, that won like $8 million or something, big thing like that. Well, when I was when I got up to accept my honor, I was just saying Extra Heat deserved it. I raced. I know Extra Heat. She deserved it. And I know the rider Antley, Chris Antley. He certainly deserved it. And then I said, now on the other horse, that I said, what we don't realize is the poor guy that had the horse and lost him in the claiming race committed suicide. Well, it was a joke, a bad joke. I shouldn't have said, you don't talk about something like that as a joke. But I did. And some people laughed and some people didn't. But it was interesting. But I didn't realize that she had started in a price. But the reason is one of the things, jobs of a trainer is you always want to get a horse in as cheap as you can without losing the horse, of course, unless you want to lose it. Some horses are going bad on you and you want to lose. But so basically you have to analyze what do people claim horses off of? Well, first-time starter, you got the breeding and you got workouts. Well, he didn't have the breeding, and his workouts were just moderate. They weren't anything to attract anybody's attention. So I got away with it that day. Now, the mistake that I made when I look back on it is I stepped him up 5,000 for his next start. That was a dangerous thing to do, even though I was stepping him up. I mean, many horses I've claimed off his first start by saying, well, he's already run for this price, you know. Is he a little better than he is? So I shouldn't have done that, but I got away with it. It doesn't matter. But looking back on it, that is the only time I allowed the chance to lose him.
Yeah, and then he spent most of the rest of his career in Stakes Company, winning 26 stakes. You know, I talked with you one time when he was going good, and Port Conway Lane, another horse you trained from the 80s, came up, and Port Conway Lane made like 200 starts. And you said to me that you hope that your experience with Port Conway Lane made you appreciate Ben's Cat more, and you hoped you were appreciating him as much as he deserved. Do you feel like you did?
Well, I don't remember that particular thing, but, you know, I guess if I said it, I meant it. But I don't know Ben's. I mean, Port Conway Lane, early in his life, won stake races, but then toward the end, because he lasted so long, he had to be dropped down in order to keep winning. So that's a story on its own. But I had lost him a couple times. I'd claimed him back. And the reason was we wanted to get that 50th win, because that's going to hit the newspapers when you do that. And I remember telling the owner, I mean, the original owner is Herman Greenberg, and he lost him. And then he ran back. I said, we got to clean him back. I don't think Greenberg was interested in that. So I went to this, the new owner I had was Glenn Lane. And I said, you want to make the papers? You want to get a notice in the media? And he said. I said, well, Glenn, we claim this horse, and you get to be there when he wins his 50th race. Now, they show back in those days, you had Charles Corot doing the Sunday morning. And he was, he had a show on him. And we got, Ben was, I mean, not Jim, Port Kind Lane was the star of the show that Sunday morning. And it showed him in the winner's circle and winning his 50th start and all that. Which was a big thing. Very, very few horses win 50 races.
You know, for sure. Anymore, they don't even make 50 starts for the most part. So.
Yeah, you're right. Man, some of the good ones don't make 50 starts because they're more valuable in the breeding.
Right. Who was Ben?
Yeah. Well, Ben was a friend of my father's. And his name was Ben Parker. And the horses by Parker's Ben.
Stormcat.
Yeah. So that's why I came up with the name, basically in honor of a trainer. And I trained for him. Basically, he was a high school head of a high school in Pennsylvania, and he then and that was I had had a this woman expert of breeding do an analysis on the mare I'm saying, you know, what's the best horse I could breed to? She said, well, I'm going to give you some names. One of them was Stormcat. He said, of course, I wasn't at the time. I never spent big money on a breeding, on a stud fee. So I think the stallion is only about, what, $1,500 or something.
Yeah, he was real cheap. He washed out of Maryland shortly afterwards, I think.
Oh, yeah. No, they took him back way across country. In California, I think it was. And the guy calls me and says, you want to breed mare back to him, you get a free trip. I said, yeah, I know, yeah, but I got to come all the way to California and back. So I passed up on that. It was just, I mean, you never know what you're doing in a breeding game. It's just like anything else in the game. So, you know, you take your chances and you play your percentages the best you can and see what happens.
For sure. It's always a roll of the dice in horse racing. All right. Are we going to see you in Timonium for the
induction? Yeah. Yeah. I'll come up with it. Uh-huh. See that. It'll be fun.
Yeah, no, definitely looking forward to it. All right, King Leatherbury, thank you so much for joining me here on Off to the Races.
My pleasure.
And congratulations on Ben's Cat getting in.
Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
That is going to do it here for this week's Off to the Races Radio, powered by the Racing Biz. Thanks so much for spending a little bit of your Saturday morning with us. We always appreciate that. Want to thank our show supporters, including Richard Hackerman, attorney at law, the Maryland Horse Breeders Association, Stallion True Valor, and Wanamakers.com online horse auction site. Thanks to all our guests on this week's show. This week we featured Hall of Fame trainer King Leatherbury, Seth Merrow from Capital OTB TV, who has been covering the Saratoga meet, and trainer Robin Graham. Keep up with racing and breeding all week long on The Racing Biz, theracingbiz.com. You can tune in next Saturday at 10 a.m. here on Baltimore Positive to hear the independent voice for Mid-Atlantic Racing and Breeding. My name's Frank Vespi. Have a great week, everybody, and we'll see you in the winner's circle.